Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Charles Robinson is a NFL reporter for Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And we were listening to his podcast, and he talked about a potential trade between the Browns and the Redskins that didn't happen yesterday. And a lot of this is because the Redskins, like the Bengals, who we talked about earlier, are clueless organizations that have no clue what they're doing. So, Charles, for those who didn't hear it, and thank you for joining us, fill us in on what happened between the Browns and Redskins both a few months ago and then again in the last, 2 days.
Yeah, this is really something that's been, on the burner, front burner, back burner, for 6-7 weeks. Like, basically, I was told last week, someone inside the organization said, look, we've been trying to get Trent Williams, Bruce Allen to loosen his grip on Trent Williams for 6 weeks, going back to the beginning of the season when Trent Williams didn't report to the Washington Redskins. The value was there for the Cleveland Browns to say, okay, well, look, is this guy worth letting go for, say, like a first round pick? And Bruce Allen wouldn't even pick up the phone. Like, it was a situation where the Redskins were completely tuning out Cleveland, I think very much to the frustration of the Browns front office. And at that time, you can understand the value for the Browns, because you're sitting there and you're saying, well, we have two more years on this guy's contract. That's two full years. Plus, if it's an Andrew Whitworth situation and he's happy and we're where we feel like we're going to be this season, we could potentially add on an extension and keep this guy through maybe 34. If we can get 4 years of an all-pro left tackle, that's worth it. That's absolutely worth the investment. The problem was, the Redskins, as you said, you used the word clueless. I mean, it's just a bad organization. Bad front office. And they camped out on Trent Williams, thinking he's gonna report. He didn't. His agent kept telling them he's not coming, deal him, trade him. The agent knew that the Browns were interested. Multiple teams were interested at one point early in the season, and that value slowly diminished. Well, then you get about what I was told yesterday, about 72 hours before the trade deadline, all of a sudden Washington started to put out there that, hey, maybe we're willing to pick up the phone on Trent Williams now. Maybe we're willing to listen. And, when I talked to somebody from the Browns yesterday, they're just like, yeah, too late. Like, are you serious? Like, you're going to tell us now, after you've burned through, half of the season, and now we're where we are now.
That's right.
And if this guy comes in now, and he's got to get in shape, we just can't just trot him out on the field. This is what's left of the season greatly diminished, what Cleveland would have been willing to offer. And the Redskins are still sitting there going, well, we could probably get a first round pick out of him. It was over. Like, it was just a completely botched move by the Washington Redskins. And the funny thing is, now Cleveland's kind of in a situation where you have to be careful to not air out exactly what happened, because I think Cleveland feels Trent Williams is going to become available again in January, February, March. Like, this is coming again. He's not going to be a Washington Redskin in 2020. And so, there's an opportunity to get another shot at him. But obviously the draft compensation is going to be significantly different at this point, with Trent Williams entering the last year of his deal and basically burning off a year of his career, not playing.
Yeah, and as you alluded to, Charles, I was saying the last 2 days that the Browns should not trade for him, because, if it was lower compensation, maybe, but it made no sense now, when you're 2-5 and a long shot to make the playoffs, to trade for him for a first-round pick.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. It's just too late in the process. The value was there at the beginning. And, I think that's what the Browns knew. When he didn't report, they thought, they probably were a little more confident in their line than they are now. But at that time, they're sitting there looking at it saying, this is an anchor. This is an anchor guy. He changes the room. He changes the chemistry of the unit, much the way Andrew Whitworth did when he anchored the line in L.A. when he landed with the Rams. And, I think that was the thought process then. So he was worth it. He was worth the investment. And you thought, we got 2 years of runway with this current contract, which is, pretty decent number. And then potentially you tack on two more years to placate, obviously he wants one more deal before he retires. So it was worth it then. But as you said, like the dynamic changed, assets changed, you know, just because I've seen some fans on Twitter are kind of like, well, if you thought he was worth a first rounder in September, why isn't he worth a first rounder now? Well, because exactly what you said, you're 2-5. It's a completely different situation. And he doesn't walk onto the field for at least a couple of weeks for you. And even then it might take him a month to 6 weeks to 2 months to even get where he needs to be on the field playing wise.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, is our guest. Charles, moving on to just more Browns topics here. Freddie Kitchens has struggled. You know, they're 2-5. Yeah. There's been a lot of, I mean, you watched the game, I'm sure, on Sunday, the Patriots game, and saw some of the baffling things. Certainly the, you know, declining a penalty to then go for it, or getting a penalty on purpose, then to go for it on 4th and 16. A lot of things.
The terrible challenges.
What are people around the league saying about Freddie Kitchens and the job he's done and the job that he may or may not have going forward?
I mean, it's not good. Like, I'm going to be honest. I don't want to.
Trust me, we don't sugarcoat things.
We've
here.
Said worse.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like, it's, you know, I will. The thing is, in the organization, enough people know that this came down to Kevin Stefanski and Freddie Kitchens, and you know, Kevin Stefanski had worked with enough people and had the kind of resume that he had that I think people thought he would have been the more dynamic hire. And now when Freddie got that job, you know, I think the questions were, when you talk to people around the league, they're like, well, okay, how is he going to fill out his staff? Clearly John and other individuals in the front office are going to do the hiring for him in terms of building his staff, because Freddie's really never been in a position where he's been a coordinator, where he's gone through this pursuit, you know, enough times to build out a plan. And so there was this feeling like, okay, he's going to have a staff that is going to be managed to be put together by front office, which automatically isn't great. And then the fact that Baker was a guy who backed him, and I've been told that that did matter in this equation ultimately when he was chosen. And the parallels you start to draw when you talk to people across the league is, you know, Ben McAdoo, when Eli Manning threw his weight behind Ben McAdoo, who, by the way, had a better resume at that point than Freddie Kitchens. But it was like, could Ben McAdoo manage the personalities? Could he manage the room? And there was one word that came up, and this is what freaked me out after the last game when Baker said what he said. As Ben McAdoo, things started to fall apart in New York, you started to hear players say, there's no accountability in this locker room. This is a problem. Like, there should be more accountability for the veterans. There should be more accountability, you know, amongst the coaching staff, not only for the head coach, but the assistants, the coordinators. And that was sort of what really deteriorated for the Giants, was that Ben McAdoo seemed to have lost control in terms of the ability to sort of hold everybody accountable, and they were listening to him. When Baker said, you know, what he said, you know, consistency, lack of accountability, there was a third one in there that was just like a total death knell. It was the lack of accountability where I'm like, okay, that's a really bad red flag. And that's what raises in my mind when you talk to these other people about, like, hey, is this just Ben McAdoo with slightly upgraded software for, you know, the roster of players that he has? It's all bad, and I think if the back end of the schedule, given how soft it is, if you don't turn this around, if you don't see some progress, and I would say some significant progress in the back end of this schedule, you don't want to see more incidents like today with Baker Mayfield. You don't want to see more incidents of these frustrations where I think Odell Beckham's frustrated. I think Odell Beckham Jr., that's going to come out as this all moves forward, that he's frustrated. I mean, there's a number of guys in that locker room where their frustration is going to become more and more apparent as this sort of piles on top of it.
So. We're talking with Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. The thing you were talking about with Baker, he said consistency, lack of discipline, and accountability.
Yeah.
It's a great point to bring up. And I think Baker has a lack of accountability. You know,
sure.
The leadership is Freddie and Baker, and they both seem a little out of control and a little confused right now. Baker's been terrible this year. And I thought that blow up today, Charles, was frankly an embarrassment. I think he owes an apology. And then he just doubles down with the tweets, which I know you retweeted that. And it just blew my mind. Like, the question was reasonable. And he brings up a penalty that happened later. He was talking to me behind the chains. The question was being asked about right at the 2 minute warning. There was no penalty till 30 seconds left. This was bad.
Right. Yeah. He conflated, you know, two different scenarios in that question, which was sort of misleading. But here's the thing about Baker. He has that edge in good times, and he's going to have that edge in bad times.
Right.
And it conveys itself far differently. You know, when he has an edge in good times, you're like, wow, he's competitive. Just like he said, he tweets, you know, hey, you can't have it both ways. This is who I am. Like, and he's right. He is right. But he also has to have the understanding that that is how this is received. Like, unfortunately, this is how this is received. So, you know, either you're competitive when you want to talk and things are going great, you're doing commercials and all these things are going on. That's fantastic. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, in the down times, I think personally, having covered the league for, you know, darn near 20 years, the best way for those guys who have that edge is they focus that edge on themselves. You know, they say, you know what, man, like, I need to do this to make myself better. I need to raise the level of the team. Here's what I'm not doing. That's how you win those situations. Instead, Baker comes off as defensive. And, you know, that's as you said, Freddie and Baker, they're the guys. They're the guys everyone's going to look at across the league, not just in the organization. So you're going to take some shots. You know, there was, for what the record was last year, and I was definitely part of this, there was a lot of celebration and a lot of applause that was granted to the Browns going into the season, but there was always a rider. What's going to happen with this group of guys, and how is Baker going to react if things do not go really well? I didn't expect it to be this bad. I didn't expect the turnovers, you know, the spate of turnovers, you know, to be like this for Baker consistently. So, yeah, I mean, there's some problems. And ultimately, I'm just telling you right now, this is all going to – Baker's not getting fired. A number of those guys in that locker room with what they're making, they're not getting fired. This is going to come down on Freddie. It's going to come down on Freddie and whether John Dorsey in the front office feels like, do we have to make a change after one season and swallow our pride and say, you know, we just made a mistake here. Let's not double down on it.
Well, you said, I mean, you mentioned the schedule. I mean, they got a game against Baltimore. They've got a game against Buffalo at home, who's a decent team. Besides that, they play two with Pittsburgh, two with Cincinnati, Arizona, Miami, yeah, Denver. Yeah. I mean, it's bad teams. If they finish with five or six wins or less, obviously, do you think he will get fired?
I think it depends what the team looks like. I mean, five wins is pretty thin, like it really is for the roster of talent that's there. But I think what people remember, it's how you finish. You know, that really is. Like, we can talk about all the mess here, but the truth is, if Baker tears it up that last 6 weeks of the season, people are going to be losing their minds. They're going to say, okay, well, they fixed it, and, you know, now we know what the problems are, and this offseason is going to be about fixing that offensive line and investing in some of these areas that created problems offensively for us. And, you know, now we're going to have a year of chemistry and knowing who fits, who doesn't. Maybe, you know, some of the guys who were injured hurt us. People will make excuses, you know, in the midst of the win. So
yeah.
I think if that back, you know, six games, if they really can get it right and right it, I think Freddie will have bought himself another year. But this is all going to come down to, you know, what does Baker look like? And is there a certain, you know, developmental step forward rather than regression? Because if they continue to play like they're playing now against inferior teams, and there's no question those are all inferior teams, and some of them are going to have the RV running in the parking lot that last month of the season, you know, just waiting to go on vacation. There's a problem there, and something's got to be shaken up. And I would expect pretty significant staff changes if this ends up being a 4-12 team, a 3-13 team. There's going to be a big problem.
You know, there is a lot of talk that there's too much on Freddie's plate, right? He during the game, he can't really focus on managing the game because he's got to call the plays, and it's the first time he's ever done it. I mean, this is a position coach who has never been a coordinator. I mean, eight games last year is not enough. It's not enough experience to go into being a head coach. There's so much more that goes into it. He gets asked all the time, hey, would you, you know, delegate a little more to Todd Monk? And he flips out. He's like, no, I'm the head coach. I'm calling the plays and all this stuff. What do you think that relationship is like between Monk and Freddie? Because you just mentioned, you know, the staff was hired by Dorsey. They helped him put this together. You know, Monk is a, you know, established play caller in his past. And, you know, the offense isn't having success right now. I wonder how those guys are dealing with the situation internally.
Well, and he was a respected hire. You know, that was a good hire.
Yeah.
Like, I think there were a number of people who felt very positively about that hire when it was made. And, you know, I will not say that I have inside knowledge on this, but I will say this, that historically I've seen when you have coaches who ascend quickly, and, you know, Freddie is the quickest. I mean, you're talking about a guy who went from quarterback's coach to head coach in a matter of months. That rarely ever happens. And then he gets piled. Hey, you got to run a meeting. You got to know how to manage your staff. You know, you have to manage all these personalities. Oh, by the way, when you're walking down the hallway in the facility, someone from marketing may grab you and say, hey, can you step in this room real quick and talk to, you know, this, we're going to lose this ad account. Can you talk to these people really quick? There's all these weird things that you never know are going to happen until you become a head coach. There's all that. And then on top of that, he knows what got him into that position. It was running the offense, having the relationship he had with Baker Mayfield. All those things put him in the pole position that landed him that head job. Now you're saying, hey, how about you step away from some of those things that gave you the keys to the kingdom? You know, that's awkward. And then you have an offensive coordinator who's sitting there going, look, I can't step on this guy's toes. Like, I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do and keep my mouth shut, because the last thing I need to do is create any kind of a rift between, you know, myself and Freddie Kitchens. So it's definitely awkward. And that's typically what happens when you have anybody who develops a close relationship with a quarterback. It can become a problem inside the franchise. I mean, look, when Lovie Smith had the Tampa Bay job and Dirk Koetter got close to Jameis Winston, Lovie Smith signed his firing slip. Like, it creates sometimes creases between coaches and the organization. So I think that's part of maybe why you see Freddie be defensive about giving anything up, because he's like, look, I know what got me here. I'm keeping that.
Right.
I'm not giving that away.
Not pretty. All right, Charles, great stuff, man. We appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Always my pleasure.
You got it. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.